You know how athletes sometimes say, stay humble? Do you know how easy it is to stay humble when you live the lives that we lead?
I got nothing but humility over here.
The only meal I eat is humble pie, ladies and gentlemen. That's every day, every meal.
Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, a man who thinks you can never say T. Swift's name too many times during an NFL broadcast, my brother Mike.
Hey, you know what? Say her name, spell her name. I'm about fun and getting more shots of Blake Lively in there. And, you know, Mark, we know you're a fun sponge. We know you hate Taylor Swift and the happiness that she brings others. But yeah, I'm all for it, man. Get her on there. Get her on the broadcast. I want her on the sideline. Okay, if Travis needs it, I want her on the sideline.
I do not hate Taylor Swift. I tune into football games to watch football and not discourse about the relationships of the players. Sounds crazy, right? Crazy. I mean, if I wanted to read a gossip column, maybe I would tune into that. Yeah, that sounds crazy.
It's ridiculous. You got to get more into celebrities' lives, man.
Why wouldn't we? It's not destroying our culture. It's great. On this week's episode, we'll break down the last week of the 2023 season for the Kansas City Royals, reflect on the season as a whole as what we do in the spotlight segment, and then we'll preview the offseason, which is probably what most of you want to hear about because nobody wants to think back on a 106 loss season or something. We got lots to do this episode. Please stick with us here. But first, we want to remind you that to follow us on all the social media we're on, that's Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. That's Instagram. That's Threads. Mike is running Threads, which I'm sure is hilarious. YouTube, subscribe on YouTube, all that sort of stuff. Follow us because we'll be putting out content all throughout the offseason about signings, trades, front office moves, ideas about what we want to happen next season in terms of lineup and everything else you can imagine. So go ahead and follow us on all of those because there will be a lot of content created. We also want to remind you that Royals Weekly is brought to you by Knapp Family Wealth. Mike, can you think of anything more important than securing your financial future?
Working that riz like Travis is.
I don't even know what that means.
Look it up, oldie.
Securing your financial future is one of the most important steps someone can take for themselves and their family, and Knapp Family Wealth is ready to help you pursue it. This isn't some big, faceless corporation we're talking about here. Knapp Family Wealth is run by J.C. Knapp. He's a huge baseball fan, and he's been helping people plan for their financial futures for 20 years. He can help with retirement planning so you don't have to work until you're dead, education planning so your kids learn to read good, investment management, so you can get all that money from out of your mattress and get it working for you. Leave it all in. Don't spend another day thinking you've got it all figured out, because trust me, you don't. Check out Knapp Family Wealth at knappfamilywealth.com. That's K-N-A-P-P, familywealth.com. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. We usually start our review of last week with roster news, but guess what? There was none. The Kansas City Royals made no roster transactions of any kind in their last week. Surprising to some degree, honestly. Instead, we'll jump right to what they did on the field. It was a, I would say, normal week for the Royals last week. They went 2-4, which brought their overall record to 56-106. They finished exactly 50 games below 500. That sounds worse when you say it out loud, honestly. They were swept by Detroit in a real stink pile of a series to start the week, but then they were able to take the final series from the much-loathed New York Yankees. The Yankees lose! Mike, have you ever seen them?
Boom!
Have you ever seen that video of David Ortiz?
I have.
I love it so much.
I think you made me watch it, yeah.
He just holds it. Yankees lose! I love calling them the Yankees, too. That's the best. Anyway, they did finish the year strong with a record of 15-12 in September. Mike, how did you feel about the final week of 2023?
You know, it's always tough to lose a series to the Tigers, but I would say the totality of the week was kind of fun, if you will. Beating the Yankees and then, you know, opening that series by knocking out Carlos Rodon before he recorded an out, that was kind of cool. We scored 12 runs in that game. And then, of course, the capper was seeing Zach do what he did in the final game of the season. If it's the end for Zach Greinke, that's the way you want it to end, where he pitches very well and you get him a win and he looks to be happy. And there's 20,000 fans cheering him on and sending him away from Kauffman. You know, if it isn't the end for Zach, great. He had a solid Zach Greinke year. And I think they strategically deployed him, especially in that second half, but to, you know, to avoid exposing him later in games. But, you know, it was pretty cool for the end of a week. When you lose 106 games, you're never going to celebrate at the end of the season. But I think there were some cool things to hold on to in this last week.
I got to tell you, I started feeling bad for Carlos Rodon in that outing where he was just getting absolutely shelled by the Royals. I mean, he looks gross with that mustache. He looks bad up there on the mound. But the guy, you could tell he was about to like pitch a fit out there on the mound. He was like, you know, he couldn't get an out. He just couldn't do it. Nothing he was throwing was fooling anyone. Nothing was, you know, overpowering anyone. It was just, I'm glad he got his money, because he was like, I don't know what he's been doing since then, taking a nap or what, but he has, the Yankees are spending a lot per quality start, I think, in his,
no kidding,
his tenure there so far. But you're right. It was great to see Greinke get a win in his last outing, pitched well. And you're right. Over the last couple months, he looks like he could still pitch in the major leagues moving forward. You know, might have to be a specialized role of some kind. Might have to limit his exposure in some way. But yeah, it was nice to see them get a series win against the much disliked Yankees. And of course, it was tough to watch to lose that Detroit series, because they come off sweeping Houston. They get a day off, and it's like, hey, don't let this be a letdown coming in to play Detroit. What happens? They get smoked by a couple pitchers for Detroit.
And they give up a home run to Miguel Cabrera again. Like, was that the gift they gave him? Is that it?
I guess.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, here.
It might be.
By the way, you've been doing this forever. You might as well just put one out to right center like you have forever. And you're welcome.
Take another in this meaningless game here. Anyway, we did have some strong performers in a week where the Royals, you know, at least grabbed one series win. Mike, who is your strong performer for the week?
I'm giving it to Zach Greinke. He had a great week. If you look at the pitching line, he was by far the best of anybody that we had. It was 10 innings pitched this week and 2 starts, 7 strikeouts to just 3 walks, only 1 earned run given up between those 2 starts. You know, he gets it with guile and know-how and, you know, lobbing it up there, throwing 88 mile per hour changeups and 87 mile per hour fastballs. So who knew?
That is great. I love that notion that your changeup could go faster than your fastball. He's an innovator.
There's no way to explain the success of a Zach Greinke. It's just, he knows the spin of the ball better than you know how to hit it.
Yeah. My strong performer, if Zach Greinke is the Royals' past, then hopefully this guy is their future. I went with Bobby Witt Jr. He had a great week offensively, 7 for 22, 2 triples, 1 home run, 3 walks, and only 2 strikeouts, 1 stolen base, and 3 caught stealings as he tried to reach for that 50 stolen base mark by running at the first sign of danger ever. But it was great to see him have a solid week offensively, close out a very strong sophomore season, looking like he's going to be a superstar in this league moving forward. All we have to hope for is that the Royals can do enough around him to create a competitive team. A lot of people are talking about signing him in the offseason long-term and so on and so forth. I'm not sure if that's going to be possible, just because why would you sign if you were Bobby Witt Jr.? But hopefully they can do something. If not, hopefully they can get value for him when the time comes. If nothing else, just create a winner before he leaves. How about that? I'll settle for that. There were plenty of weak performers as well, of course, as is always the case. Mike, who was your weak performer for the week?
I went with Nelly Nukes, old Nelson Velasquez. He had a struggle of a week. He's been so fantastic since we got him from Chicago for Jose Quas, but he was only 3 for 16 this week with 8 strikeouts and no walks. And that's not like a surprising line for him necessarily. The surprising part is no extra base hits in those 3 hits. He has an ISO over 300 since his time with the Royals. And you get a week where he gets only 3 singles. That's a little bit odd for him. So I'm not worried or anything. I'm excited actually about moving into next year with him and the ability that he has at DH or if you need to in right field. But the dynamite in that guy's bat is going to be exciting. He just struggled this week.
Yeah, what's interesting is what's going to happen when the book on him gets out, because it seems like everybody knows now what you need to do is throw him pitches in the bottom half of the zone.
Breaking pitches.
Every home run he's hit has been a fastball. Yeah, breaking pitches down in the zone, he struggles. So don't throw him any fastballs in the upper half of the zone, which actually kind of goes counter to what a lot of pitchers are trying to do now to get swings and misses on their fastball. They're like, we're going to go up in the zone. We're going to give ride up in the zone. He hits really well against those. He is effective against fastballs in the upper half. you're going to have to figure out ways to throw breaking pitches in the lower part of the zone. This could help him get walks because those are harder pitches to locate for strikes. And so he needs to be patient and wait for his pitch. But it is interesting that, the league will start to adjust to him if he doesn't show that he can handle some breaking pitches that are left over the middle of the plate. I chose a hitter as well, an outfielder, in fact, as well. And I went with Drew Waters for my weak performer of the week. A lot of people are talking, who's going to be the answer in center field for the Royals? Some people say Drew Waters. This week, he went 1-for-12 with 2 strikeouts, no walks, and no extra base hits. Not a great week for him. The strikeout rate remains too high. It's good to only see him strike out twice this week. This week's just mostly about having bad luck on batted balls, and that's fine. But we got to ask, I don't know that he's definitely the answer in center field. I think it's still a question mark how the Royals will handle center field. Mike and I are going to talk about this a little bit later. We've talked about it in the past. Like, do they need to go out and look to sign somebody? Will they be looking to trade for someone? Or could Waters, Isbell, and maybe Dairon Blanco make up some sort of combination of guys who can make center field an effective position for the Royals? We'll see moving forward. Mike, in a week such as this with a lot of emotion, a lot of heartstrings to pull on, what was your theme for this week?
I'm going with the classic one-hit wonder from Semisonic, Closing Time. There's a line in there, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. We end this chapter, but that's the beginning of our next one next year with, I think, what we think are some pieces. Not necessarily as many as we want, because you've got, you know, one starting pitcher you're excited about. You've got a small handful of bats that you're excited about. You have maybe nobody, maybe one or a half. We'll call it a 0.5 relievers you're excited about. But every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. So that's excited. I'm already excited for spring training next year. Really, I'm excited to see what they do in the offseason. I'm excited to see if Salvi stays on this team. I'm excited to see if Olivares stays on this team. I'm excited to see if what they do with Brady Singer over the offseason and Daniel Lynch. And so, yeah, I'm excited. This end is the new beginning for me. And I can't remember an offseason I've been this excited about in quite a while.
Right, because last year we got early indications that they weren't going to do a ton in the offseason. They downplayed the offseason quite a bit last year. They're doing the exact opposite this year. JJ Piccolo has been very vocal that they need to make some changes this offseason. They got a press conference scheduled for tomorrow morning. I'm a little worried they're going to come out and drop a bomb or something. I hope so. I hope so, but we'll see. My theme for this week is life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friends. And that's a Beatles song. We can work it out for those of you who are, you know, familiar. Life is very short. The idea for this was like, hey, it's time to start making those moves right now, guys. It's time. Like, I want to see a sense of urgency from JJ Piccolo in this front office in the offseason to make the changes necessary to really flip this team around as quickly as possible, right? We know that they wanted this year to be an evaluation year. Okay, fine. I'm of the mind that part of the issue with the Royals previously was that they never made moves with a sense of urgency. They never went all in on a rebuild. And as a result, they took forever to do these rebuilds and they never even materialized, right? They should have traded Carlos Hernandez at the trade deadline. That's one of those indicators that's like, ooh, you went with half a loaf again. You didn't hit the throttle. Hit the throttle. Show some urgency. Pretend like if you don't win some next year, your job is gone, because that might be the case. So in my mind, hey, have the disposition that life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friends.
What a great song.
Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. For one-on-one personalized physical therapy, we choose All In Physical Therapy. They took excellent care of our mother after surgery left her with pain and limited mobility in her arm. She loves to work out, be active,
dance on the soles of the weak and wanting.
The excellent specialized care she got at All In Physical Therapy had her back to being active in no time.
Now she won't stop calling Mark soft and taking money out of his wallet.
I usually don't have much, but you know, if you gotta take it, I take it. All In Physical Therapy knows how to help athletes recover. It's owned and operated by Lee Summit's own Tommy Frevert, a former Arena League football player, Northwest Missouri State Bearcat, and a hell of a guy. They have offices in both Blue Springs and Lee Summit, so get over there to work with Tommy. Tell your doctor you want to do your physical therapy with the best of the best at All In Physical Therapy. To learn more, give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300. Or visit their website at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. Also, get over to their Facebook page to take a look at the cornhole tournament they're hosting this Saturday for a scholarship fund to send people to PT school. Mike and I will be playing in that cornhole tournament. If you want to come out and challenge us to a little cornhole, their Facebook handle, I think, is just All In Physical Therapy. So go over to their Facebook page and check that out if you want to join and see if you can take a crack at beating us and winning some money in cornhole. Mike, it's time to face the music. We made the predictions. Now we got to face them. As you all may recall, we make predictions at the beginning of every season because we need something to humble us even more than our daily lives do. In our spotlight segment this week, we're going to revisit those predictions and try not to break down into hysterical tears because they are bad. Mine especially, but they're bad. Okay.
Yours were really bad. You know, just popped into my head when you were saying that. What? You know how athletes sometimes say, stay humble? Do you know how easy it is to stay humble when you live the lives that we lead?
I got nothing but humility over here. I mean,
come on. The only meal I eat is humble pie, ladies and gentlemen. That's every day, every meal. But Mark's about to eat a whole bunch of it in this game because he did terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hope humble pie is good for your cholesterol because my doctor is very worried. Okay, so I have no idea why they're in this order. And these predictions actually reminded me that some guys played for the Royals earlier this year, especially this first one. Mike, we set the over-under at 23 home runs for Franmil Reyes as a Royal.
And I'd like to say one of us was very correct.
I don't know what I was drinking at the beginning of that. This was probably when I was sick in Arizona. Mike made me sick, and this was delusional as a result of this.
Delusional it was. This was not then, though.
Mike went under the 23 home runs for Franmil Reyes. I took the over for some reason. As you might remember, or probably not, Franmil Reyes hit two home runs for the Royals, a grand total of two. So he did not go over the 23.
I just want everybody to know, Mark thinks he's really good at placing bets on the NFL. So
look
at this.
I am good at that. I am good. Don't listen to him about this. I am good at that. Anyway, our second thing we both missed on by this much. We got screwed on this one, right? Like, for some reason, instead of doing over-under on Bobby Witt Jr.'s like OPS or weighted runs created plus, we just did it on his on-base percentage. So our second one was over-under 320 on-base percentage for Bobby Witt Jr. He came in at 319.
And we both picked over.
Of course, swift kick to our pills. We both took the over like morons. So what? I don't care. Bobby Witt Jr. had a great year. Good for him. It's fine. But I am glad that he showed us that he could hit this year, even if not. What's funny is, you know, he turns it on just a little bit more earlier and boom, we're covering easy. But anyway, our third prediction, over under 110 weighted runs created plus for MJ Melendez. You'll remember last year he had like a 100 even weighted runs created plus, so which went 10% better for him this year. I'm surprised at how close he got after that start that he did. He ended up with a 92 weighted runs created plus this year. Luckily, we both took under. We were convinced he wasn't gonna break out really offensively this year. He did not. So we both got that one right. Good job. My first tally and my first win there. Good job for me.
Yeah, the second half for him was the only thing that got him close.
Right.
I mean, that tells you how bad his first half was that he could still only get up to a 92 weighted runs created plus when he had a pretty good second half. So
right. I'll look up those numbers just real quick because they're really interesting. Like that second half from him, if we look at it, I bet the weighted runs created plus might be around 110, if not over. Give me 2 seconds here to look that up. I know we're killing podcast time, but it is an interesting point to make here.
Just to let you know about Mark's betting prowess, because I know you guys are all interested
in
it. He was the one that got killed last night by Patrick Mahomes sliding.
I did.
Instead of scoring that touchdown.
I did.
So he took the Chiefs plus
Thanks,
eight,
Patrick. Maybe slide me slide me a couple bucks from that $500 million contract of yours.
But the Chiefs got the win, so we were happy about that.
Yeah, happy about that. So in the second half, He was .273 as a batting average, .352 as an on-base, and .485 as a slugging for a .124 weighted runs created plus MJ Melendez was. That's July 10th and on.
My so God.
After the All-Star break. 10.5% walk rate, and then 26.2% K rate. What a difference before the All-Star break and after the All-Star break for that guy. It's like night and day. We ended up getting both of us getting that one right under for MJ Melendez, though he did try valiantly to get back to somewhere close to average. We also went over under 100 weighted runs created plus for Michael Massey. We both took the under. We were both massively right because he only ended up with a 73 weighted runs created plus. Is he going to be a starter for the Royals next year? What is going to go on with this guy?
I don't know. I think he probably will because I don't think they go out and get anybody that challenges him. And I don't think Samad Taylor is ready to challenge for more of an everyday role at second base. I don't see somebody else coming in. I've looked at the free agent market. I don't see anybody there that you really go out and get and think, oh, it's going to improve us at second base. I don't know. I think he probably gets another shot to start the year as starting every day. And then if maybe you go get somebody later on, I don't know. It's really, really tough. It wouldn't surprise me if they take a flyer on like a retread that plays second base. That would not surprise me, but I don't see it happening.
Then do you think he gets any better next season?
That's a tough question. I do. He's still young. And I think the more time that he has in the league, remember he had just an absolutely atrocious first month of the season too. And was a little bit better after that. But really for him, it's, can he be more consistent? Can he hold his approach when it's good for longer stretches of time? Right now it just doesn't happen. You know, he has a week where you're like, hey, Michael Massey looks really damn good. And then two, where it's like, is he a Major League Baseball player? And so, yeah, it's the consistency for him. He's got to get an approach locked in that will work for him like Bobby did this year, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's all about what he's swinging at because he's not the type of hitter like Bobby. Anywhere in the strike zone, if Bobby puts a ball in play, there's a really good chance it's going to be hard. Michael Massey, even when he's squaring a ball up, is never going to have the kind of power that Bobby Witt Jr. has to impact the ball. So he's got to be more patient. He's got to be more selective. He's got to find really his nitro zone where he can really impact the ball hard and give himself the best chance to get hits from it. So hopefully that becomes a thing he works on this offseason. Worked on a little bit during the season and got better, but it needs to get even better moving forward. Talking about another center fielder right now, besides Drew Waters, who we talked about earlier, Kyle Isbell, we took over under as a 720 OPS for him. He came in well under that. 622 was his on-base plus slugging. Mike, you took the under and got that one right. I took the over and did not.
Yeah. Can I ask one quick question here?
Yeah, you just wanted me to confirm that I got that one wrong.
One quick question. What the hell were you thinking? Can we start with that? And how dare you? I'll yield the floor.
Yes, I have a question. How dare, first off,
how dare you?
Sorry. I was hopeful that Isbell could, you know, turn some of his more hard hit balls into hits. He's got a swing issue. And I think the one thing I've learned from this season is that Kyle Isbell really is probably never going to be offensively productive enough to be an everyday player or even on a bad team in Major League Baseball. Productive in terms of his defensive ability, runs the bases pretty well, but I don't know that he's going to ever hit enough. So that's that. We went to the pitchers now. Going to the pitchers, which is going to be ugly. Mike, over under, we went over under 3.5 ERA for Brady Singer. One of us got this one right, and the other got it wrong.
Let's give some context here. You got it wrong. Okay. Giving some context. Remember, he came off of that fantastic back end of the season last year. Okay? Right? And then they took him for the World Baseball Classic, and he came back, and he was not even the same guy at all. He was, you know, velocity was down, couldn't locate his slider at all. Again, will not throw a changeup or develop any different pitches or anything like that. So, yes, I was incorrect on this one. I picked under 3.450. You picked over, and it was 5.52. And that's why a lot of people are hanging their hat like Brady Singer's a solid part of this rotation. Brady Singer was bad, people. He was not good. He was very, very bad. And if you're holding on to him for half a season, because you remember that half season, then you're going to get bitten. Unless he changes something, it's not going to get any better.
See, I thought the context you were going to add is, I'm sorry, I drink a lot. But you went another direction with it. That's okay. It's okay. It's fine. I do want to point out about Brady Singer, his fielding independent pitching and his XFIP, his adjusted fielding independent pitching, look roughly the same as years past. So he's by FIP.
That's not very good
XFIP,
either.
No, he's a league average pitcher, if a slightly above league average pitcher in those two categories this year, honestly. And so, it is what it is, but his ERA is a lot worse than that. So there might be a market for him in this offseason, honestly. But yeah, you're right. His ERA was way over. You should have chosen over. Next, we went with Chris Bubich, and, freak injury. Never predict those. We said over under 20 starts for Chris Bubich. Mike, you went under. I went over. He actually only had 3 starts, if you recall.
Pretty good in those
Chris
3.
Bubich can bounce back. Looked real good in those 3. Type of guy who you're like, okay, maybe he could be a contributor this year. He definitely took to the coaching of this new pitching coaching staff, but it messed up his UCL. He had to get Tommy John. If he comes back next year, he's probably not going to be more than like 80 innings. So we'll see on him. Hope he can bounce back and be what he was. He's the only one of those 3 not the only one, but he's a guy who, I feel bad for to some degree because he never got any real pitching development. And then when he finally did, his arm blew up. And it's like, God damn it. And so hopefully we get to see something from him. I'd be happy if he just threw, a few starts at the end, maybe some innings out of the bullpen and see how he feels after that. The next one we both got right, and I'm actually kind of really glad because it's a cool stat. We said over under 5 strikeouts per 9 from Zach Greinke. He made it over. He went 6.13 strikeouts per 9, which is an improvement from last year. We both went over, and Zach, towards the end of the year, started striking some guys out a little bit more, which was fun to see. So that was cool. The next one I feel like was a 2-foot putt, and for some reason I missed it. in hindsight, it looks very...
Because you're bad at golf.
Obvious. I am. In hindsight, this one looks obvious. Although, remember, we're coming off the Dayton Moore era where he refused to trade anyone. The next over-under we did is Scott Barlow a Kansas City Royal in August, yes or no? Mike said no, I said yes, because I couldn't believe that they were really going to be willing to trade the assets they should, right? They did end up trading Barlow, which was good, they should have, but part of me was still trying to protect my heart, because I was like, no, they're just going to screw me again. They're just going to stab me again by not trading the guys they should. Now, they still should have traded Carlos Hernandez, and they probably should have traded Edward Olivares too, but I digress. At least Scott Barlow was traded, the return for him. He went to San Diego, right?
I can't even remember now.
Yeah, he went to San Diego. I can't either. My brain is tapioca pudding. Can't remember what they got for him at this point. My brain just sucks.
All I remember is the Reagans and the Velasquez trade. That's the only ones I remember.
I remember the who we sent to the Dodgers. They sent us.
Oh yeah, we sent Yarbrough to the Dodgers. Yarbrough did really good with the Dodgers, not surprisingly.
Derlin Figueroa, yeah, he did. He did. He's very good. Let's see here. Here we go. They got Henry Williams and Jesus Rios. Williams is a pitching prospect down in he was in High A. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. He's still interesting to me. I think he's got
Scott Barlow
pretty good stuff and is pretty athletic for how big he is. He's a big guy, so. I still like Henry Williams.
Yeah, he is interesting. Next, we'll talk about the pitching staff as a whole. We went over under 3 for the pitching staff's strikeout to walk ratio. They actually ended up with a 2.30, which is quite a ways under 3, actually, if you're thinking about this mathematically. Mike said under barely, which he was wrong about. It actually was way under. I said over because I don't know, and I take a lot of drugs.
I was correct, by the way. My point for that,
yeah,
thank you.
You were. Yeah. Whoever's keeping score, write down a point for Mike.
if they were keeping score, next, I would definitely be winning.
You'd be winning, and you're going to win, ultimately, for the second year in a row. I'm sure you remember.
Yes, I won last year, too.
Next, we did over-under 15th in MLB in runs scored per game. Over-under 15th in Major League Baseball in runs scored per game, which, to be clear, meant better than 15th. We both said over, and they were not over.
No.
They were under. They were 23rd at 4.17 runs per game. Oddly, they were over if you take a certain period of the second half where they started playing much more like a top 15 offense, but too little too late for our predictions. And losing Vinny Pascantino didn't help either. The second he went down, I'm like, well, I don't think they're going to make it in the top 15 for runs scored. And I was right. Anyway, next we did over under 15th in Major League Baseball on runs allowed per game. We were 100% dead on for this one. They were 28th. We both took under, and they were 28th at 5.3 runs per game allowed. Very, very bad.
What two Pretty teams were worse?
The pitching staff wasn't
That's what I want to know.
I
what
don't,
were the two teams that were worse than them in giving up runs?
The A's probably? I'm pretty sure Oakland was one of them. Yeah, I'm not sure though. Here comes the real kick in the teeth right here. We're starting to get into the win predictions. Over under 70 wins, we both took over. They were way, way under. We'll talk about why here in a second. Mike's record prediction was 72 and 90, and mine was 74 and 88. We were both way off.
But I was closer.
Mike, once again, we must ask the question, where did it all go so wrong?
April was the answer to that question. It went wrong in April. And then it went wrong in May, too. And then in June, it was still pretty bad. Now, the big deal was it was what I warned everybody about. And I this is the second year I've warned everybody about it. We're relying on unproven pitching that we're just expecting to take big steps forward, right? And that's never going to – you're always going to set yourself up for failure when you do that. Like baseball – winning baseball happens because of pitching. And we have had unproven pitching for a very long time. And then we see like something at the end of a season like Brady Singer did last year. Or we see one little thing from a guy and we're like, he can be that good for a whole year. Well, has he ever been that good for a whole year? Well, no. Then why are you expecting him to be that good for a whole year? That doesn't make any sense. And so, yeah, that's the thing that gets me is we have to pull back and say, what's the 99th percentile outcome? What's the 50th? That's what you should be expecting or something like that.
No.
So,
no,
yeah.
No, you're wrong here. You're absolutely wrong here. If you think what happened this year is the Royals' 50th percentile outcome, you don't understand math.
No, wait, like,
you just have no concept of mathematics, right?
I understand that.
Yeah, this was not the 50th. We need to take a step back and acknowledge that what took place this year was actually the result of a bunch of wheels falling off and was like the 10th percentile outcome for the Royals. Yes, they could have been, you know, better. They could have been, right? Like you mentioned, oh, we're expecting guys to perform better than, like, to take a step forward and perform better. No. If they had guys who just performed the same way they have over years past, if Brady Singer had performed the same way he did all of last year, or the year before that, things would have turned out better, right? If Zach Greinke had performed the way he did last year, or the year before that, things would have turned out better.
He did.
No, he didn't. Last year, he had an ERA under 4. This year, his ERA was over 5. That is not the same. Okay? If Brad Keller had performed the same way he did last year and the year before that and the year before that, things would have turned out better. What I'm saying is what had to happen to have one of the worst seasons, statistically speaking, it tied for the worst season in Royals history and on pace at one point to be one of the worst seasons in MLB history, a lot of things have to go wrong. Yes. Things are going to go wrong when you're playing with guys like Brad Keller and Lynch and all these guys who are unproven and unsettled as players. But the fact is a lot of them had to go wrong, basically all of them, all at one time. Sit back and think about this. Not only was Brad Keller and Daniel Lynch really bad, not only was Brady Singer really bad, but Brad Keller, Daniel Lynch, and Chris Bubich were all injured for basically the entire season. Yes, they were bad, or at least Lynch and Keller were. They were also out all year. And so we're relying on guys who are our 7th, 8th, 9th pitchers, and we have no depth. And so that hurts us, right? This is what I'm talking about.
Well, we said that, though. Like, that's
yeah,
the thing.
We said that.
Okay,
we knew
and
that.
I understand
right?
what you're saying. They're there are certain things that the Royals could not, Royals and Royals fans could not count on happening, like the injuries and things like that. And yes, what if you get the Brady Singer that you he's been, but you can't say Zach Greinke's a year older and I'm expecting him to be the pitcher he was last year, the 2 years before that, or the 3 years before that. Same with Brad Keller. He hasn't been as good as he was in 2020 since 2020. He's progressively gotten worse and you're expecting him to be that pitcher again? Jordan Lyles the same way. Like a guy can't get a year older and you think he's getting better, right? Not in those stages or not in those ways that they are in their career. Brad Keller, you should have known, wasn't getting any better. And we knew that they weren't deep. We knew that you're going to count on guys 6, 7, or 8 at some point in the season. And we were like, who is that guy? Kowar? Jackson Kowar, that guy? Who's like, no. Royals fans have to stop saying, well, we might have a good pitching staff. Take a look at it analytically and say, a couple of these guys are going to get hurt. A couple of these guys are going to regress. Do we have what it takes to fill in for that? We don't. We haven't in years. And that's the product that you get.
Yes, we did know that the pitching staff was not deep enough to sustain the injuries and regression that would happen. But if you say a couple of guys are going to get hurt, a couple of guys are going to regress, if we're talking an even distribution, then a couple of guys are going to have career years. Who had their career year?
Yeah, Cole Reagans, that's it.
He doesn't even count because he wasn't here for like 80% of the season.
Yeah, the guy who looked like he was going to have his career year was Chris Bubich, and he got hurt.
And he got hurt, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, so there wasn't anybody. Yeah,
we needed a couple of things to come together. We needed the Royals to not be very deep and to just generally be a team that was going to be well below average anyway. Their 50th percentile outcome was probably around 70 wins. Okay. The problem is we needed that's what happened. And then another thing happened. They got 10% outcomes from Brad Keller and Daniel Lynch and a whole host of other guys, Brady Singer, Jordan Lyles, Zach Greinke too, honestly, like they got the worst performances of some of these guys' career all at the same time. Right. If that happens, you're going to be historically bad. That's just how it works. Instead of previewing a week's worth of games, we'll take our preview section to preview a very important offseason for the Royals. They lost 106 games in 2023. General manager J.P. Piccolo has already signaled that some changes will be made to the roster. In fact, he's having a press conference tomorrow, which I mentioned earlier. Who knows what ends up happening during that press conference? Not really sure. Mike, tell us where you think the team should start in terms of changes to find more winning baseball in 2023.
Yeah, we've already talked about this many, many, many episodes, but they have to acquire pitching. They have to acquire quality pitching and a lot of it because the farm system isn't good either. So the pitching in the farm system is bad. The pitching in Major League Baseball is bad, both bullpen and rotation. All you can do is take pieces from your lineup, which honestly isn't all that deep either, but you've got to start trading some of that stuff in for pitching until the draft picks that you've made this year and hopefully next year start to come up through the system and strengthen that farm system, because you have one piece in the rotation that you can count on. You have maybe 3 or 4 in the lineup you can count on, but you got to do something to get more pitching.
Yes, they do. And I think, but some of that solution has to come from within. They cannot go out and buy 7 new starting pitchers, 8 new bullpen guys. It just can't happen. That's impossible. And so some of the solutions will have to come from within. Maybe it's Angel Zerpa, who I thought pitched really well for the last month and a half of the season. Jonathan Bolin, we only saw once or twice. Veneziano, we only saw once. Chandler Champlain, who pitched well in Double A. Mason Barnett has pitched well in Double A. Some of the solutions will have to come from within. Maybe Brady Singer gets back to his decent times or something. I don't know. But it can't all come via free agency and trades, because there's just not enough money, and you know, they won't do it. They won't sign that many guys.
Say it. There's not enough money. There's not enough player capital.
Yeah, there's not.
Like, we don't have the player capital to go out and get all those guys. No. Like, that's not how it works.
No, and that's fine. I mean, but at the same time, we're counting on the pitching player development to turn some of those guys into valuable starters, right? Like I said, it could be Angel Zerpa, it could be Jonathan Bolin, it could be Veneziano. Any of these guys could add something in the offseason that makes them viable as a bullpen piece or as a back-end starter or something like that. But that is something that must take place in this offseason, because they won't have enough to go out and sign or trade for a deep enough pitching staff. we've already brought up the pitching, and so let's talk about it specifically. How do you think they should approach the rotation this offseason? What kind of changes should they make? What avenue should they take to acquire better starting pitching?
Yeah, and I know you're very much against this, but I think they at least have to look into the international free agent talent pool, because the free agent talent pool for MLB right now is garbage. It's nothing. It's not any, and then the competition level for those is going to be really high too. So that will also drive competition to the international free agent side as well. But you have to at least take a look. You have to look at it. You have to try. And then I think mostly it ends up coming via trade. The Giants, the Pirates, and the Dodgers are the three teams I've kind of honed in on. They have a combination of deep farm systems on the pitching side and possible needs for bats, outfield bats especially. And so those are kind of the three teams that I would look at first to see if they're interested. The Giants have mentioned, or there's been reports that the Giants are interested in trading for some bats. They have good pitching. Preston Farr put out a real good little piece on one of their pitchers, and I'm blanking on the guy's name now, but I really like him. Big righty, got a great split finger.
Is that his name?
Yep, that's it.
Keaton Wynn.
Great split finger, yeah. And so I'd love to see that, you know. I just question, you know, kind of what we have to give that other teams are going to want. I think Salvi and Olivares are both productive players for lineups, and teams want them, but they aren't the youngest players. And, you know, Salvi's got the contract and stuff, and so we'll see what turns out there. But I think the trade market is likely where they make the biggest splash.
I think it's got to be a mix of free agency, trade, and development. I'm not against them playing in the international market. I just don't think they will. And so, you know, sure, can you compete with the Steve Cohens of the world? Can you compete with the Dodgers of the world to sign? No, that's just never going to happen. And so, you know, I think it'll have to be a mix of free agents, domestic free agents, trade, and development. I like names. You know, honestly, the starting pitching market isn't great, but it's better than I thought it was previously, because I think there are a couple guys who are going to opt out of their contracts, like what's his name, Sean Manaea, like Seth Lugo with the Padres. I think they're going to opt out to get Padres into this week free agent market, so that they can be the ones who make the money on it. And so I think I'd be looking at guys like Martin Perez, who's a great reclamation project. He had a real down year, I think, with the Rangers.
A big year 2 years ago.
Big year 2 years ago. Yeah. Has had a few.
I think they gave. Yeah.
Has had a few big years in Major League Baseball. I'd be looking at him. I'd be looking at James Paxton with the Red Sox is another guy I'd look at. But then trade and development. Like I said, some of the solutions will have to come in from in-house, and so we'll see on that front moving forward. But there are options to go out there and get better in starting pitching. But the starting pitching isn't the only issue with the pitching. The bullpen is also, might even be in worse shape. I don't know how to describe this bullpen right now, but it's atrocious. It's really, really bad. Mike, how does a team that's this far away from competing go about rebuilding a bullpen?
Well, I think this is where it gets extremely interesting, because if you're out there looking for trades and you're looking for starting pitching and people just are not giving up starting pitching, you maybe look to some elite level bullpen prospects and maybe try and do something that way. Because if you can bring those guys to Major League Baseball and they show out, you can then trade them at the deadline for starting pitching, like we saw with Cole Reagans this year. We saw, you know, we traded Quas for Velasquez. We traded, you know, the guy for, we traded Yarbrough for Devin Mann, even though Yarbrough was kind of a swing guy, kind of a deal. But yeah, I think that's one avenue they might possibly go. The Royals are going to have to get creative to acquire some of this talent. And that might be one way they do it, is focusing on, okay, bullpen arms are a little cheaper. Teams are a little bit more willing to part with high level bullpen talent when they're in the minors. And so if you identify a guy that you really like and you think can transition to Major League Baseball, maybe that's an avenue that you go if you can't get your hands on starting pitching.
I think they have to, you're right, they have to get creative with how they acquire this bullpen talent, and they should be probing every avenue they can imagine to find one arm here, two arms there. You know, like, it's got to be a total approach to acquiring things. I'm talking minor league free agents, Rule 5, minor league trades, throw-ins to major league trades, reclamations. I'm talking turning their own minor league starters into relievers. There is no reason in my mind why Anthony Veneziano should chill in AAA getting starter innings when he might be an effective bullpen guy in Kansas City. Same goes for Jonathan Bolin. Same goes for a couple other guys. Mason Barnett, you know, these are guys who, yeah, they might need to be bullpen guys for the, it just makes no sense to like sit them in the minor leagues unless they truly have to develop for some reason. Get them in the major leagues if they can handle it as a bullpen guy, if they're one of your best bullpen options, and let them learn up there for some reason. It's Mike, I know you love the idea of transitioning guys into the bullpen first and then having them become starters.
I've always been a big fan of that.
Why not? There's no way Colin Snyder is a better bullpen option than, you know, Anthony Veneziano. I don't believe it. And so why not give him a shot? You know what I'm saying? Like, and so they have to look at every possible, because they need 7-8 new bullpen options by next year, because MacArthur and everybody else, MacArthur and a bunch of guys. Luckily I did read the other day. I was totally at a loss. Like, where is John McMillan? Like, is he going under the knife? Like, what's going on? He is not going under the knife. I think it was just a forearm strain. So you might have McMillan, you might have MacArthur. Other than that, you are just searching for answers in this bullpen. On to the lineup, which in my mind is actually one of the most interestingly debated things. There are some people who think the lineup needs a lot of help and other people who think it doesn't need as much help. Like, should the Royals be doing anything to strengthen the lineup? And if so, what?
Well, I think you have to take a look at the team overall and say, that is our position of strength right now as a whole. Are there holes in the lineup? Yes, there are, at second base, in center field, maybe one other outfield spot, you know, not consistency in those things. But that is our position of strength, especially getting Vinny Pasquantino back next year. He adds to that even more. So that's where I think you then trade from because of that. Now, you're always looking. If there's a player that you feel like can come in and compete with Michael Massey to get everyday at-bats at second base, I think maybe you pull the trigger on that. But again, looking at the free agent market, I didn't find a one. I did not see anything there that you would be happy with bringing in to compete with Michael Massey. So then you're talking about either in-house, if you think there's somebody in our minor league system, which I don't, or trades. And if you're going to be trading, I would hope you would go get pitching and not waste any of your player capital that you have in Sal or Olivares or maybe even Singer and trade that for a position player when that's already your strength of your team right now. So I would say probably just staying with the guys that you have offensively, maybe looking at somebody from the minor leagues to bring up, you know, to compete at least at second base or in center field. I would be okay if they looked at something in center field, but you don't want to give up too much for it because you need a lot of pitching help.
Yeah. My only thought on the lineup is if they're going to try and improve it, it should really be on the margins. They should maybe like minor league free agents or minor league contracts for some guys trying to look to be role players. I think Tyler Gentry offers a decent option in the lineup, and then getting Vinny back will help as well. Everybody's talking about center field. I put out a tweet today that might surprise some people, but Dairon Blanco in 138 plate appearances this year was worth 1.1 F-war for a full season worth of stuff. That puts him on pace for about 4.5 F-war for a whole season's pace. I think people are underselling the degree to which he might be an option in center field next year. Now, of course, we had Drew Waters, Kyle Isbell, Dairon Blanco, some rotation of them, I think, could be good enough in center field. Second base, you're right. I think that needs to be rotational. I think they need to try and find somebody to take that place. And you might also see an option that's like, well, we find a third baseman who we like. And so Mikel Garcia now moves over to second base.
And Garcia,
that's an option as well. So we'll see about that.
There isn't anybody at third in free agency either.
There's nobody anywhere in free agency. That's kind of the thing. It's a bad free agent.
Ahmad Rosario is the only guy I would even look at.
Matt Chapman is a guy I would look at. Matt Chapman at third base, maybe. But we'll see on that moving forward. Mike, is there anything the Royals need to be working to change this offseason that we haven't discussed?
They gotta figure out something to do with Carlos Hernandez, and this feels like the third or fourth year we've said this. The third year, I guess, we've said this. But it's kind of for different reasons now, you know, he's in the bullpen now. And so, but they got to figure out something to give him pitch wise to change his stuff, to make him effective. He's got a live enough arm to do it. go figure out a way to make Carlos Hernandez effective. Figure out some sort of solution so you're getting some offense from center field, whether that's putting Drew Waters there or Dyron Blanco there or somebody else, that's fine. But you can't play Kyle Isbell every day with a 70 weighted runs created plus. That's not going to work. You're going to have to get creative on some of that stuff. Now, I don't know the answer for Carlos Hernandez either. I want to think it's probably pitch usage, the kind of decisions he's making with how he's throwing, but improve one of those off-speed pitches tremendously and let him not throw that fastball all the time. That way it can be a true changeup style pitch where he's blowing it by guys, because you know he's never going to locate it. And if he's throwing that 55, 60% of the time, he's going to continue to get crushed.
Yeah, I think they need to – you're right. I think I agree with the fixing Hernandez thing. I think that will be a priority because, again, the bullpen solution will also have to come from in-house at least a little bit. And so he's got to get better. And part of that, I think they need to continue overturning.
And there's been some – sorry, throw this in there real quick.
Please interrupt me.
Sorry, I want to throw this in there real quick. Sorry, I meant to mention this because I just thought of it because of that. There are some reports that Drew Coleman is looking better on the velocity front. And so perhaps there's a little bit of an in-house fix there if Drew Coleman comes back a little bit harder. Continue.
You mean Dylan Coleman.
Dylan Coleman, not Drew Coleman.
If you're gonna interrupt me, get it right. This show's about facts, okay? After that rude interruption, I think one thing that they'll need to do as an organization is continue to work on developing the player development side of things, like keep that player development overturn happening. Keep introducing more people who are into a data-driven player development. Keep getting the player acquisition and the player development on the same page. We saw the hiring of Brian Bridges. And I think that's part of getting that all on the same page about like, what are our strengths in terms of development? What should we be targeting in acquisition as a result of that? All that needs to be moving in the direction of getting on the same page this offseason. I would say they took a step forward last offseason with that. Needs to take another step forward this offseason. We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just About Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. But first, I want to give a programming note. This is our final in-season episode of Royals Weekly. From now, we shift to off-season mode. So we'll be having only one episode per month throughout the off-season. We do plan on coming back with regular episodes, as we always do, when spring training starts. And some talks are in the work about some big expansion stuff for us in the spring. So please stay tuned. Tune into all those social medias to follow all this big news we're going to have about expanding in the spring. But until then, we're going to do one episode a month, and then we'll come in with special episodes if big things happen. Okay? Mike, with that said, tell me something interesting that happened to you last week.
Well, I mean, a lot of interesting things happened to me. We just came back from the Ozarks, a great wedding in the Ozarks, had a lot of fun doing that. But while I was there one night when we got back to our hotel room, I turned on something that was genuinely great. I mean, like when people make things, when it's creative things, you know, sometimes they're really good. You applaud their creativity. Sometimes it's just home run right away. Boom. Knew it. I watched 5 minutes of it, knew it was a home run. And I'm talking about Jason Isbell live Southeastern video on YouTube. Little background here. If you don't know who Jason Isbell is, he's a musician. He does usually what they call Americana. You might think of it as country because he has a thick Southern accent, but it's all based in his unbelievable songwriting ability. 10 years ago, he came out with his groundbreaking album, Southeastern, and everybody looked at it and said, holy crap, this guy might be the best songwriter in the country. And for the 10-year anniversary, they just recorded a live concert of him doing the whole album, and they put it on YouTube for free, and it is unbelievable. That was the album that got me into his music. I saw them perform on Austin City Limits right after they put that album out, and he did some covers of songs that he did when he was in the Drive-By Truckers, but mostly it was either his own original stuff before Southeastern, but most of the thing was that whole album, and that's why I fell in love with the band to begin with. And this thing is unbelievably good. The room that they are in, the sound is so good. The production of the live concert is so good. His band is very, very talented. And he is a phenomenal guitar player on top of being an extremely good songwriter. And so if you have never listened to Jason Isbell and you want to, go check out Southeastern Live on YouTube and just be blown away.
You might also take a box of tissues with you while you're watching that, because he writes some of the most effective music I've ever heard in my life. And it is, some of it is very, very sad. So,
yeah.
But it will get
you. I have seen grown men cry listening to his songs. And I'm talking Tough Guys.
I've seen one of the grown men cry listening to his music. It is incredible. It is incredible.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to If We Were Vampires and you don't start to tear up, you are made of stone.
For me, it's the song Elephant. The song Elephant will get me every single time.
Ooh, that'll get you too.
But anyway, great, amazing songwriter. I'm stoked. I'm like going to watch that. I'm going to make Riggs watch it with me too. It's going to be great.
It's so good. Only one critique. They stuck a commercial in between each songs on the thing. You're like so engrossed in the first song that you're like, oh, and then blam, it comes to a commercial, which sucks a little bit. But I love that. I mean, the songs are so good.
I'm talking about something that has nothing to do with that. And that is something that somebody reminded me of on Twitter like a week or so ago. And that is media bias. So I'm a big, I like to learn about like media and read about media critiques and things like that. And there's this guy I follow who's kind of not really a journalist. He's more like an opinion maker at this point, but he used to be a journalist many years ago. And he was talking about like what his notion about what media bias is. And people always talk about media bias. They're like, oh, this is, and when they say it, they usually mean that they're biased towards one political point of view or one political party or something like that. And there are certainly media outlets that are really just propaganda networks for political parties. That exists, right? Like, I'm not trying to say that that's not a thing. That is a thing. And it is killing this country, honestly. But the thing that is interesting to me and something that I don't know that we talk enough about is the media is biased toward negativity. Right. And so this guy has an opinion that media, the greatest media bias that exists is its bias toward negativity. And I 100% agree with that to some degree, at least when you're talking about traditional media or media that is in some way responsible media. So you think about like legacy media, like the New York Times, the Washington Post and stuff like that. Those media outlets, while they are not necessarily partisan in the same way that like Fox News is, they are extremely biased toward negativity. And as a result, it actually warps the way we think about the world, right? There are so many people who have come up to me complaining about inflation without realizing that inflation is actually back down to the Fed's target level. Nobody knows this, right? Like, nobody knows that inflation is actually now under control. Everyone's like, oh, it's just going crazy. I'm like, no, it's not. I had a bunch of people swear to me about a year ago that we were in a recession. We were not in a recession. We had not been in a recession at any point, right? Like, but people don't know what a recession actually is. And they saw on the news that a lot of people thought we were going to be in a recession. So they hear we're in a recession. Like, this is the thing about overly negative media coverage. There's been like good news after good news after good news coming out economically about America. Extremely low unemployment, inflation under control. That's been happening for months and months and months, but nobody ever hears it. Because the media is overly biased towards that which is negative. So a positive economic story, which comes out roughly every time the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out a report, it just never gets covered, right? And so everyone's like, you wonder why every poll, no matter who's president, no matter who's in Congress, every poll of Americans, America thinks that we're on the wrong track. No matter what, they all think we're on the wrong track. Why do you think that is? It's because our media is exceptionally negative and positive coverage can never get through.
And if you talk to, and here's another great example of this, because I've same exact thing. I hear this all the time. And you and I are really plugged into media. We follow a lot of it, and news media especially, but violent crime is another beautiful example of this. Like, if you ask people today, the United States is one of the most violent crime countries in the world, and we're way worse than it's ever been. Our violent crime rates are so high. They are insanely down, and they've only been going down since the 1970s. Okay. And for a long, and honestly, like, the FBI puts out these statistics about violent crime in the country all the time. And if you look at the chart, it's like 1970s, and then it's 1980s, it goes down, 1990s, it goes down, 2000s, it goes down, 2010s. It's been going down steadily since the 1970s. Well, people go, and I tell people this, they're like, no, that can't be right. I'm like, yeah, it's right. But I completely understand why people don't think that, you know, because all you hear about in news media is violent crime. And because now we have a 24-hour news cycle that is just filled and filled and filled. And in 1970 or 1980, how many hours of news media did we have? We had one hour, and we all watched the same one. And so how many violent crime stories can you fit into 1 hour when you got to cover the weather and sports and all everything else too? And so, yeah, it's a perception kind of problem in a sense. Right. But what those large news media companies realize is negativity makes money. And that's what it boils down to. Negativity makes money.
And there is tons of research on all of this, by the way. I learned all of this in school when I was getting a degree in media and journalism. They told us all of this stuff, right? They told us, hey, there's a ton of research that suggests that like people perception of violent crime is way skewed because of the media. And they told us, hey, you know, we're doing this, right? Like basically media is doing this on, you know, and they're doing it because it causes anxiety and fear in people. And anxiety and fear are the things that keep you watching, listening, and reading, right? Like that is the thing that drives media consumption. Fox News knows it. Facebook knows it. All the major media outlets know it, right? That's why they do it. Okay. That's crazy, right? But it's true. So I'll tell you, I'm surprised that other people hadn't heard this. I thought this saying was very common, but in the news media world, there is a saying, if it bleeds, it leads is the saying, right? Which is meaning if it's about violent crime, we're running it first. It's the first thing in the newspaper. It's the first thing on the broadcast, whatever. If it bleeds, it leads, right? That's the whole idea. We're skewing your perception of the world by insisting that like the most interesting stuff is the stuff that scares you the most, but that's actually not true. So do your best to find media sources that are going to actually tell you the truth. If you need a suggestion, DM me and I'll send you a whole bunch that'll do that. Okay. But we will be back in exactly or approximately 1 month with more positive, well, it'll actually be objective news and analysis about the Kansas City Royals. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.